Planning your first big trip overseas can be a very intimidating but exciting process. There are so many factors to consider. It can all be a little bit overwhelming, but once you focus in and you pick where you want to go, what you want to do, everything else kind of falls into place with just the right planning. Today's guest is a listener of the podcast and a reader of the blog, and we go through one of his really big trips that he just went on, giving advice and the things that he discovered and learned about himself along the way. Let's get started. Welcome, welcome to the Nomadic Foodist Show, a podcast for food-obsessed travelers. My name is Chris, your host, and I help people discover amazing food all around the world. I'm very excited to have a listener on the show. His name is Horacio, and he has been listening to the podcast and read a few things on the blog as well. And he's actually an old friend of my wife. So he actually reached out on Instagram and had a few questions because he was planning this big trip. It was going to be over a month long. He's going to be stopping in the UK and he's going over to Finland. So he just wanted a few pointers on a few things. And I answered a few of his questions and gave him some recommendations for where to eat and a little what to do. And the rest was kind of just everything else he planned on his own and did himself. We go over some of the fears he had, some of the planning situations, logistics that he had to overcome. And it was great for him to go on this amazing experience and to grow from that whole process. So we dive into all of those details and more. And it was just so exciting to hear somebody who has listened to the podcast and they were inspired and wanted to go and to travel and to do more with themselves and to follow some of their dreams and passions in life. So here is my interview with one of the listeners from the podcast, Horacio. All right, Horacio, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking with us about some of your travel adventures. Before we kind of just jump in here, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about who you are.
Thank you very much for having me. It's cool. I've loved listening to your podcast and, you know, hearing about, you know, other people's adventures and your adventures. So it's cool to be able to get here and share a little bit of my story. Yeah, no, I live here in the Westwood area, grew up. Born and raised in the same neighborhood, I believe. Tierra lives in, right? Yeah, you guys are around this side of town, so you know. For the longest time, you know, was the little baby. Then had a couple of little brothers, and I became the middle child, the forgotten child, you know. So, didn't get too much. Yeah, didn't get to, you know, get it too much of the... of the fun and much of the travel, as you know, I would hope, seeing, you know, everybody that, you know, has gone on their adventures, you know, going even, you know, like Disneyland and stuff like that was always one of the things that I've always wanted to do. Traveling has always been part of, you know, like my goals in life, you know, seeing like New York and all these other cool far off places. You know, in like the movies and stuff that I enjoyed as a kid, that was just everything that was in the back of my mind was, you know, I'm going to travel. I'm going to see the world, you know?
Yeah. So where have you traveled to? So just to kind of give an understanding so people kind of know where we're going, you went on a pretty great trip recently and we're going to dive into the details, all the specifics and those fun bits, but I'm curious about what your traveling has been up to that point. And what your travel experiences have been, if they're good, bad, and everything in between.
Yeah. So my traveling experience, you know, it honestly really just recently started. When I was younger, my family had some, you know, photo albums of, when we went to Mexico, but I didn't have any recollection of that at all. I was far too young.
Yeah.
Getting older, I started thinking, man, I haven't traveled yet, and seeing, you know, my friends, traveling, it just really made me think, man, I gotta make that jump. I always grew up, you know, here in the Westwood, you know, like it's not like a rich area or a nice area at all. So with my peers, the kids that I grew up with, I never really, you know, seen them, you know, travel as much either. So it was kind of like my circle. We were just very like, stagnant, like happy here with where we were at. And that's kind of all I knew. And then, you know, just before, literally just before the pandemic happened, I finally was like, hey, I'm going to go for it. I submitted everything for my passport. And once it finally came in, I was like, all right, my plan was actually, and my dream is still, is to go to South Korea. And you were Korean, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So I actually had a friend from college who was from South Korea, and he's always told me, you know, you got to come. Don't worry about anything else. Just get here, and I'll take care of you. Know, you can stay with me. Take you all the cool places to eat. And I'm like, oh, that'd be so cool, because you guys have been to South Korea, right? Like,
yeah, to Seoul, yeah,
yeah. Oh, the food there just looks absolutely amazing, and I'm just like, you know, even just thinking about it now, like, I can't wait till the day, because I know for sure I'm gonna go one day. But that's where my plan was to go to first, was Seoul, and then the pandemic happened, and I thought,
oh yeah, tough situation.
Yeah, it was tough, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I'll have to, you know, put off traveling for a little. That was, you know, that's my dream. That's actually definitely still on my bucket list. And recently, I guess like the military, like museum, they mm-hmm. recently opened an exhibit honoring like Mexican and Mexican American soldiers that fought in the Korean War, and my grandfather fought in that.
Whoa!
And so yeah, so I think, man. Yeah, like when I saw that video, I was like, wow, it was touching, because it was like, it feels like in a way like my grandpa being honored, because, you know, that they said that where his like records were, the information on him, where he, you know, was stationed and all, was burnt in a fire, and my mom missed the window to be able to recover certain documents. So I don't really know where he's been, and so it, like, you know, it feels like in a way that he's being honored. So that's why, you know, I really, really, you know, dream of going to South Korea.
No, that's a great reason. That definitely is honoring him, especially for, you know, for him to go over and go through such an intense, I guess, conflict over there. Mm. And if anybody is, you know, watched documentaries on like the Korean War and everything, it was really interesting. And unfortunately, not many people understand it as much as other big conflicts, such as, you know, Vietnam and World War II, because that's where all the movies and that's where all the shows are made. But the Korean War is sometimes left to the wayside, and so people don't really quite understand what happened there. So that'd be really great if you had a chance to go over there and to check it out for sure. I mean,
yeah, no, definitely. It's one of those things that I really want to go to. What's crazy is my little brother right now, he's on his way to Guam, and they're actually going to have a stop in Seoul. And I think he says they have a 6-hour layover there. So I'm like, man, if you get the chance, go to the museum for me, kind of like live vicariously through him. But South Korea is on my bucket list. But, you know, during the pandemic, you know, unfortunately, you know, my recent memory, like traveling to Mexico now, was in 2020. It was in bad circumstances, you know, a family member passed away. But going out there, I was able to connect with relatives that I haven't, two little brothers that I haven't met before, you know, and just being able to experience Mexico, you know, as an adult, and, you know, seeing the food and just, you know, going to the plazas, and they have like the little taquitos there, you know, the street tacos.
Oh yeah.
It's, you know, it just like opened my eyes. Cause like here in Denver, I think, you know, we have pretty good tacos, but then going there, it just, you know, blew my mind. And like my cousin yeah. Fernando actually opened up his own little taco shop in the little town that we live in. It's and it gets pretty busy, and he does, like, you know, like those pastor tacos.
Yeah.
Yeah, those, I could talk about the pastor tacos all the time. They're so delicious, man.
They're the best. They are the best, by all means. Well, so where'd you go in Mexico for that time?
So my family, they're from, they live in Guadalajara, Jalisco.
Oh, okay,
And we have, you know, roots in Nochislán, Zacatecas, where it's a little more north of Jalisco. It's in the mountains. That area is very famous for, like, the ice creams that they make. And I believe you guys were talking about, like, this place of ice cream in Argentina, which, what was it called? It has a funny name.
Tufik?
Toothache,
Yeah.
yeah, that place, yeah, I think, you know, like think about, you know, it's crazy, like how there's each spot would have like its one like little thing that it's known for, and Nochislan is known for their ice cream, but what they do is they put like this like cherry, it's like slush with their vanilla ice cream, and just the way they make it, and it's, have you ever had? It's called like rompope.
No, I haven't. That
Yeah,
sounds.
it's a very, yeah, it's good. It's very like, it's when you eat it, it leaves like a really nice like aroma and aftertaste for a while, and it's just really good. It has kind of like a orangish yellowish like color to it. It's very, very good, but they do that with their ice cream. Yeah,
My
like
mouth is like
just
watering as you're
yeah
talking about it. I'm like,
yeah
yes.
It's good, it's really good. Like if you ever see like, you know, the little paletero guys running around, they typically have some ropope. You should give it a go. I
I
think you would really
will.
like it. Yeah, no, it's good stuff. But yeah, Nochislan, it's very known for and popular for that that ice cream down in Jalisco. And I'm, because you guys just went to Mexico, have you gone to other places other than Mexico City?
Jessam, we went to a resort for a friend's wedding a few years back, but that's like the only place we've gone to together. And then it was Mexico City for this big trip go around. We were there for a month. So I'm really excited to see some more of it. Trust me and Tierra are just like, whoa, this is going to be so good to see some other parts of Mexico and eat some of the best food of your entire life.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. And where my family are, like they're in, it's in Zapl, it's called Zaplotanejo. It's just a little bit south of the big city, Guadalajara. That's where most of them are, and that town is very famous, and Guadalajara in general is very famous for, it's called tortas ahogadas. And what they do is they get the torta with, you know, the meats that you want, you know, they fix it up, but they drench it in a pool of like the consomme, like the soup.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and it's
Yeah.
so good. And you know, my cousin, they'll sell those too, but they put them in like little bags, and just so you can just
Yeah.
take it to go. But yeah, the
Awesome.
tortas ahogadas there, if you get it'll change you if you haven't tried it yet. So in Zaplotanejo, if you ever make a visit, maybe, you know what, you and Tierra, you can come and meet my family, and we'll take you all the food spots
That
over
sounds
there.
wonderful. That sounds
Yeah,
great. We're
no,
in.
yeah. Yeah, no, and I think, yeah, so yeah, that definitely would be, you know, something fun to do. And there's this place south of there too called Ocotlan. They're very famous for like the birria, but they do it with you know, like true goat meat.
That's right.
You know,
Yeah.
yeah, because that's, you know, that's because you could do it with, you know, beef, you know, but with goat meat, it's I think it's the best.
Goodness. Oh, I think we're starting to set some plans for the future now over
Yeah,
Mexico.
no,
That sounds great.
no,
Now
it's
you've
great.
convinced me.
Yeah, no, yeah, then you can swing by and we'll, you know, get some of the street tacos al vapor, and there's this one lady too in the ranch. She makes like the best churros. I love churros. The other day, yesterday actually, I went to go get some from this little food cart, and I'm like, man, I kind of just want to go to Mexico just for that lady's churros that she makes, because like she makes them in a different way though. Like usually they're just like little like cylinders, you know, like a stick.
Yeah.
But the way she makes them, there's just kind of like a flat square piece. Like, and she opens it up and she puts like the cajeta, the cream,
Yep,
you know, anything that you
cajeta.
want. And yeah, it's good. It's so good.
Well, actually, speaking of churros, I think our recent trip, we were in, you know, Colombia, and there was somebody there, or not somebody, a store that made churros, and they were just. They're probably my favorite ones out of all the ones I've tried in South America and then Mexico and maybe Spain. I don't know. They're a little bit different over there, but they were really tiny, these little like circles, and man, they were just phenomenal. I'm not too sure why it was so good, but for some reason it was really good. Just sugar, no cinnamon. You can ask for like a chocolate dipping sauce, but by all means, like churros are just one of the wonderful life pleasures that very few people know about. Like
I know.
and like eat regularly, because if there was if like this place in Colombia like was here in Denver, I'd go there probably once, two, three, four times a week maybe. I'm just
They'll know you by name for sure.
That's
Hey,
right.
the
The usual, man, that's all I need.
usual. Oh, that's good. That's good.
So So it sounds like the only place you've really been for, I guess, these sort of trips, international trips, is just Mexico, or have you gone other places internationally before this big trip?
Nowhere else before this big trip. Cool. You know, I've always, you know, had that, you know, that vision to travel.
No, absolutely.
But you know, it always seemed like something that was intangible, you know, that, cause like I said, you know, growing up, it wasn't really, you know, not from like the rich family or anything like that. So it really seemed like something, those things that, you know, maybe like, you know, the rich people, it's more for them, you know, and I never really envisioned myself actually being another place, you know, but this recent trip, you know, was, you know, the big one, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
It was one heck of a way to really start going, you know, as, you know, going to Finland, golly, of all places.
Well, where did you go? Did you guys ever do a family vacation or anything growing up? Did you guys go anywhere in the States or anywhere in Colorado?
You know, that was always one of those things that, you know, my parents said that we were going to do, but we never really got around to truly being able to go anywhere like truly out of state. The times that we did travel, we would go to like mountain towns. Like we've gone to Estes Park, you know, like Winter Park, and spent weekends out there. There was one time we did go to Yellowstone National Park, and I remember I was super young, but I do remember the sense of like fear seeing all the animals walking around outside. I was like, this is not for me. I was like, get me out of here, please. You know, but, you know, other than that, no, like I never really had too much experience traveling.
And that's good though. That's actually like, it's actually good. I'm going to get into why here in a second, but that's pretty crazy though, because I can kind of relate a little bit. For me and my family, we didn't actually go on vacations at all, really, growing up. There's only a couple, like our first real like family vacation was probably when I was a senior in high school. But I did do some traveling with my church group, and I was doing a lot of martial arts and stuff when I was a kid. So we did a lot of traveling for tournaments, but no like real like relaxing vacations until like later on. And I don't know. I thought for a long time that travel was for rich people, and we had very, very little money. And I'm thinking back now, it's like, yeah, I'm trying to think of like a family vacation. Just my family. We're not visiting relatives. We're not doing anything, just like a nice family vacation. And we didn't really do any of that. The one that we did do my senior year, we only did that one because my dad, because I lived in Virginia, and my dad was in DC at the time for a business trip. And so we were able to stay in that room, and because it was comped by, you know, his company. So we just kind of hung out there, went to the zoo, did a few restaurants and stuff. And that was the closest thing that we had, I think, to a family vacation ever. Yeah. As far as, you know, but before, you know, after I graduated and stuff like that, we went on a few more, which was nice. But it's just kind of crazy to think how understanding travel is like, you think you have to have a lot of money to go, and you do need some, but I didn't know that. If I was 18 and I knew that I could travel with very little money, I probably would have never gone to college. I just would have been like, okay, I will see you guys when I see you.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> And just go see the world. Yeah. And I get you.
Yeah. There's so many opportunities now for travel. I wished I would have known about, like, I would have worked one full year, saved up all my money, and just backpacked across the world and like worked on farms. I would have worked in restaurants. I would have done all these things to kind of like, you know, pinch pennies and make a little bit extra here and there for my stays. But that's what I probably would have done. I don't know.
Yeah,
that was kind of my thing. I've always wanted to travel, but I was just like, I'm not rich. We don't have any money. Like, when I was in college, I was really, really poor. When I got out of college, I was really, really poor. So it's a lot to think back now. Like, man, it's kind of, did I miss it? But everything happens for a reason. So
yeah, no, it does. And I think that idea, like, of, you know, maybe like working at a place, you know, just for a little, is good. Cause, you know, one of my old buddies that he actually, you know, we went to middle school together, and unfortunately he passed away a couple years ago, may he rest in peace, but he got the chance to see the world. And he always told me about, like, to always encourage me as well, you know, to travel. And what he did is that he did find programs, you know, where he either taught English for a couple of months, or, you know, worked on farms. Like, he worked in like Cairns, Australia for a little while. Whoa. Like on like on a farm out there.
That's great.
And then he worked in, I think it was like in like Thailand and just like everywhere. And that's what he did, is, he worked from place to place, and he was really good, with like English and stuff. He was always a really good student, so that definitely helped me. I wasn't, but it was good, to see, that. And even when I was, in Europe, I met somebody too that does something similar, where she actually is just about to go to Poland to teach English there as well. And I'm, thinking like, that's something I never thought about,
Yeah, me neither.
that's a way to open the door to travel and see the world. And, sometimes an extended period of time, a couple months at a time. So, that's good.
And it's crazy now that how many people have these opportunities to travel. Teaching English is probably one of the easiest ways to do it and to make money and to see another country. I've met a ton of people who were teachers in Seoul, South Korea, when my wife and I were down there. And no offense to those people, they're really, really nice. But they, I don't know, I was expecting a different type of person, maybe someone who seems kind of brainy or who's like super analytical or smart or type A. But no, they're just kind of like, I don't know, just like your normal friends, and they're out there teaching English and they got certified. They had their undergrad, I think, for Korea. You have to have like your undergrad in college, and then you have to pass, certification tests. But it's pretty cool. Like, they're just kind of like normal people just traveling the world teaching English. And then in other countries too, like Thailand, Vietnam, they're all looking for English teachers as well. Yeah. And a lot of times you don't even need your undergrad. You just have to pass your English certification tests, and that's it. And then you're good to go. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I think that's what I'm going to try to look into as well, because I hear too, like, even like in Japan, they do take a lot of like English teaching, but I think they might have more strict requirements. But yeah, that's I just want to go somewhere like in Asia. It just looks so cool. And just to experience like the different cultures, because like you could go like Japan, South Korea. I definitely want to go to Thailand. I hear a lot of cool stuff about Thailand. And I actually met a friend who's in Cambodia. And she says that Cambodia. Have you been to Cambodia?
Yeah. We went to Cambodia too. Yeah.
No, I want to go there for sure. And I've seen like documentaries on Netflix about the different street food vendors, and it just all looks so mouthwatering. And
it's wonderful. Actually, one of the favorite things in Cambodia were some of the every one of these countries. There's someone making crepes. Okay, it's really basic and it's delicious. But my favorite crepe came from Cambodia. I'm not too sure why it was really good. Maybe I was just really hungry, but it was like a plain Nutella crepe. Okay. And they actually crack an egg and put like a fried egg in there too. And they kind of smooth it out. So you have a Nutella and egg one. And that was like my favorite one. And they had them in Thailand and Vietnam. But Cambodia's was like the best one. I don't know why, but just
they got that magic touch.
I guess so. Okay. So, and that's actually good. I'm glad that I guess now people have some understanding of travel and what's possible and what's out there. And we have a lot of opportunities in front of us. We just have to kind of take the risk to kind of go and do it. Because if you haven't traveled very much, any sort of trip internationally, especially if you're by yourself or even with, your spouse or like a friend or a family member, it can be very intimidating. So now let's move into kind of this trip that you went on. Let's start off with like a brief summary. Like, where did you go on this? What was it, like a month long trip, right? Or a month and a half?
So I was gone for 6 weeks, and five of the weeks I was in Finland. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, walk us through kind of like how it started off and just kind of like your rundown of the whole thing.
Yeah, no. So it was one of those things where I found an opportunity to work overseas. And it just, I feel like it was just by chance in a way. One of my pen pals, she's from England, and she worked at this place that does like holiday resorts, Christmas, trips for families. And I've actually never heard of this before, but she told me about it and I was like, oh, that's cool. And she was always telling me, maybe you should try it next year. But, it seems like one of those things where you just kind of like say and don't really think much of it. And once they're, the period that they were started hiring, she sent me a screenshot of the page, and she's like, look, you should give it a go. And, she was always, I've always told her about like, me wanting to travel. I just never got around to it. And I thought, why don't I shoot my shot? You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. So I submitted my information, did like this little audition video, and like 2 days later they called me and they're just like, yeah, we want you to come out here. And that's when like it really hit me, like, oh dang, like I did that and they want me, like what is this? And I just, you know, that's when I was like, okay, you know, I'm gonna have to, you know, really start sitting down and planning stuff. So, you know, I made it to where, since I'm going to make a huge trip to go overseas, I wanted to get the most out of it. So I gave myself a bonus week so I could visit, you know, England, because I've always loved, you know, the idea of visiting, you know, England and going to, you know, experience like the culture there as well. So, I booked that trip to London. And what was nice is that that company, the part of the deal was, is I'll get, you know, my wage for the day. They will give me the housing, 3 meals a day and free flight from London to Finland and back to London. I just had to, like, you know, pay my own way to London. But that was at the time I had plenty of, you know, time to pay for it. And so it was actually very, very affordable to get to London. And that's kind of how it really just like kicked off.
All right. So you go over to London, you spend a week there, then you go to Finland. So what job did you get? Like what'd you do over there in Finland?
So what they called me was, again, so since it's like Christmas centered, that's kind of like what the whole theme was, because it was in Lapland, in the Arctic Circle, it was the North Pole. And this company, what they do is they kind of like bring, you know, families in, and the kids have that idea of, hey, we're going to go find Santa, you know? And so I was an Arctic star. And so as an Arctic star, I pretty much was assigned my own bus, and I would get a bus full of families. Sometimes it would be like 50 people, 49 people, you know, like it was usually like around there. You know, I never had anything more than like, I think the biggest group I had was like 55. Thank goodness. There were some people that had way more. And I was just in charge of, you know, one, picking them up from the airport and taking them to, you know, their accommodations. There was like cabins, fancy suites, a lot of really cool, you know, different places that looked absolutely amazing. And then I just kept them on schedule, you know, getting them to their meals, you know, getting them, you know, to each of the activities as a part of the adventure of, you know, trying to find Santa. And what was really cool is that they really just told us, you know, this is what the end goal is, but we could really make it our own, you know? And, you know, me, I've always worked in call centers. You know, I never really had any face-to-face interaction with anybody before. So this was completely out of my comfort zone. And, you know, I think that's what was the best thing about it, is because it challenged, you know, like I challenged myself, you know, to get out of that comfort zone, not only just to travel, but to do stuff like that, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it was a bit, it was busy.
That's
like,
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, so you worked there for a full month.
Yeah. For a full month.
Okay. Are you comfortable with saying what the company was?
It's totally fine. I just wasn't sure. They're called Canterbury Travels. They've been doing this from what I hear for years, and it is a really big deal for like families in the UK. You know, some of my other friends that I've made like online gaming, I told them, hey, I'm actually coming to the UK and I'm going to be going to Lapland, and a lot of them would like jaw drop, like, OMG, you're going to Lapland. I'm so jealous. And I was like, really? And I guess it is a big deal that they're going, you know, people are going there to go through that experience. And one of my families, there was three generations. It was the great grandmother, the grandmother, and the mom. And then, well, actually four generations, one of the little kids. And they all have been through that experience at Lapland. So it was kind of cool to see that, you know, but
that's awesome.
It's so cool.
Okay. Okay. That's actually pretty amazing. Just to have a chance to travel and to go to a whole nother country and experience that, and I guess be part of a very important part of their winter celebrations, and you contributed to people's memories that they'll have forever. You know, I think that's pretty amazing. That's pretty awesome. So you took like 6 weeks to go a total for all of your trip. How did you get that time off for work here in Denver?
So I just, you know, definitely just to credit, you know, just some of my amazing leaders that were able to, you know, accommodate this. You know, I was upfront with them. You know, I let them know that this was an opportunity of a lifetime to be able to travel, something that I've always wanted to do. And, you know, I did have a lot of, you know, the PTO, you know, saved up, but I didn't have quite enough. And okay. What was really cool is, you know, I talked to my boss and I was like, hey, what could we do? You know, I had to be upfront, you know, because like I said, I've always had that urge to travel, and I was honestly ready to walk away from the job just to not lose this opportunity. You know, it probably in hindsight, that probably was just like crazy, but I was like, that's how serious I was, like finally getting this chance, you know? And, you know, my boss was like, you know, we value you a lot. We don't want to lose you. Let's see what we can do. And so they were able to make it to where those hours that I had for PTO would be able to sprinkle across throughout that whole time to keep me on the books and keep me as an active employee. And like, I was able to still get some of that income as well, you know, and it kept my benefits active. And they just gave me that leave, you know, and I'm just like thankful because, you know, I don't think any other job would have done something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was, I'm so thankful for them to do something like that.
Well, don't say the name of your company, but like, what do you do for work?
Yeah. So I work, in, utility billing. So I just travel around the town really. Just collecting data and
gotcha.
You know, that alone, yeah, I get to travel every day in that sense, you know, so that's pretty cool. Get to, and yeah, I really do get to see, little mom pop shops, different little restaurants and things around town that I, you know, never would have seen because they're just out of the way from my usual like commutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's actually, you know, a blessing within itself to be able to, you know, find, you know, me, I love burritos. And
yeah, I can tell from your Instagram.
Yes, I love burritos. Like, I feel like, yeah, it's just, you know what, I fully like 100% fueled off of just burritos. And so when I see these spots that have like breakfast burritos or whatever, I have to try them. And there's a lot of really good food out here.
So your Instagram is great because actually I've learned a lot of things. I actually saved a few places that you've put on your Instagram. Since you're like all around, you know, Denver, I'm like, oh, okay. He said that was good. So I actually have a certain section of my Google Maps where I like save restaurants I want to go to. So I already saved a couple in there just from the past, from the past like 2 weeks or something like that. I'm like, man, actually that does look good. So I'm gonna give it a shot. Well, that's good though, that your company though, they understand, they value you enough. And I think people who want to do something similar, maybe not full 6 weeks, but even like how many people do you know has taken 2 weeks off for vacation? You know, like not many people will take 2 weeks off at a time to really explore a place. And if you're lucky enough, like somehow a month, I've known zero people besides like travel bloggers, just normal people with normal jobs. No one's ever taken a month off really. So very few companies, just like you said, will give their employees a chance to do that. But I think because you're a good employee, you're reliable, that they give you that opportunity because I was in the car industry for a long time. And for 4 years, three, four years, I was a sales manager and I did the majority of the hiring and a lot of the stuff with the staff and meetings and training and all sorts of stuff, as well as like working car deals and doing all that normal, you know, car salesman kind of thing with my salesman. But if one of them, you know, if one of my best employees came up to me and they said, hey, I need a month off to go travel and do this vacation thing. And if they're a good employee, I would have absolutely done it. Like if I had the power, but I didn't. But if they had the power to do so, to go, because I understand as a boss that good employees are hard to find. And if something's really valuable to them and you as an employer let your employees do something like that, then they're going to be loyal to you for a very long time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for people who have normal jobs, I think they should take your, I guess, your example and try to do that. Where if you're a good employee, you rack up enough PTO time, you save it up, but then you also talk to your boss, you know? Mm-hmm. And if they're a good boss and if you're a good employee, a lot of times you can work out that longer travel because you may not have that chance in the future as well.
And I think that like kind of like shows too, like the importance of just, you know, like open communication, you know, just, you know, like I was just straight up, you know, honest. And what's really cool is that like the, like I said, like the leaderships, you know, like they, like the leaders, 'cause he took it to like directors and they all like agreed to, hey, we value him, you know, this is a good place, you know, good opportunity. And they granted me that, you know. I think a lot of workplaces, you know, they don't really take that human factor like into consideration, you know, with a lot of it, you know, it's, you know, very statistic driven and like, oh, you know, but what I'm thankful for is that they kept that, like the idea and that thought of, hey, you know, this is like a moment of enrichment in a way, you know? And so it was really cool. Like I'm very, very forever thankful for that.
All right. Well, that is actually just an amazing thing that you did and that you pulled off. And I'm glad that you were able to kind of do this trip. Now, let's dive into a little bit more of the details here. So you go from Denver to London. How was that long of a flight since you haven't like done a flight that was like that crazy, the transatlantic flight?
Oh man, I was dreading it so much because the longest flight I've ever been on was 3 hours. It was from here to Guadalajara, and already, you know, just before like we landed, just on the 3 hour mark, I was losing my mind because I get super claustrophobic, and sometimes I have like inner ear issues as well. So when we sway and move, it feels miserable. So I was like, oh man, this flight is gonna be death. But you know, I was like, I don't want to lose this. And thankfully, with the timing of it, you know, we left here like around like 4:30, like p.m. So mo the bulk of it was overnight when I would be sleeping. So I slept most of the time. Thank goodness. I was like so thankful for that. And it was cool is that, you know, I got a chance to speak to, you know, the flight attendants, and she told us since, you know, from Denver over to London, we're kind of with the wind, like, you know, the airflow. So it's often a lot quicker. So we made it there in 8 hours instead of 10. You know,
Whoa,
but
that's actually a big difference. Holy guacamole.
no, yeah, that was a huge difference. And I was so thankful. I was like,
What?
yes.
I've never had a flight that was 2 hours early on on a long transatlantic flight or something. What? And did you take a direct flight from Denver to London?
I opted to do the direct flight
Nice.
because I
Good
get
choice.
nervous about the, you know, like, you know, switching at a different airport or something
Yep,
like that.
yep.
So I just went direct, and you know, and I think that was like the best choice, you know, just to get it over with in one shot. And you know, the staff was really nice, and what was really cool is, you know, because I charged up my phone, I got like this really nice, you know, portable charger because I thought, man, you know, I'm gonna have to rely on this. But they had like this whole
Yep.
entertainment right there, so that was a relief. You know, they had a pretty cool like library of movies, and you could actually see like on the map where your flight is. That was so cool. I was very entertained with all of that. So I survived it. Thank goodness. I was a wreck before though.
What did you think of the food on the plane? Honestly.
You know, it was they gave us like who was it? Meatballs and mash with gravy.
Bangers and
So I
mash,
feel like
yeah.
yeah. So I was like, hey, that's not too bad. But yeah. It's airplane food. What's the deal with
What's the deal with airplane food?
that? You know, once I tried it, I was like, I get what Jerry was talking
That's
about.
right.
Yeah, no. So I stocked up on some snacks too, and you know, I was able to take some, you know, my snacks, some hot Cheetos and stuff. And because me, I'm huge into chips, and like, and I learned this, and a lot of people hammered it into me when I was out there. They're like, hey, they're called crisps. I was like,
There,
okay.
yes, that is correct. That is correct. Because chips, you'll get French fries over in the UK.
You would, yeah.
Understandable. Okay. Because what's interesting about long flights, if you're going internationally, usually the country that you're going to will give you food that is from that country for the flight in some sort of way. Like even trying to think, the ones to Japan I've taken from the United States, really interesting. Like they'll give you like slippers to put on and stuff, and they serve you like Japanese style food. They'll serve Japanese beer and stuff like that. So I thought that was kind of interesting when you go and you fly and like, yeah, it gives you a sample. I don't know. I have no problem with airplane food. For me, for the most part, it's pretty good. I've never gotten sick from it. I've never felt nauseous from it. And I know some people and very big travel people have always said, like, don't ever eat the airplane food. For me?
Yeah.
I'm good. I liked it. I like it. Yeah. You know, it's fine. I'll eat just about anything. And I've been blessed with a very ironclad stomach. So no issues with airplane food whatsoever. But it's good, though, that you had a smooth flight. It was a good experience for the most part. Mm-hmm. And for me, I love those long flights. I love it so, so much. It's like no one bothers you. You're just sitting in a seat watching your movie. And then all of a sudden, just, you know, the flight attendant will be like, hey, do you want anything to drink? Do you want anything to eat? Yes, no. And then you're at peace again. I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, I just love it. I just zone in and I'll just watch like six movies in a row.
Yeah, no, it is. It is nice, you know, that they're, you know, they come. It's kind of like you feel pampered in a way, you know, because like for me, the only flight I'm familiar with was just like a small, like it was like Volaris. It was from, you know, Denver to like Mexico, and they didn't do anything like that because it was a quick 3-hour trip, and I didn't even use a restroom in there, you know, but. Now, like going to like the restroom in here, it was so small. I was like, "What am I doing here?" You know, like I had to like wiggle and stuff and try to, you know, position myself right, and it was super loud. Like I did not, I got so scared when I pushed the button for it to flush. I was like, "Oh God,
yeah,
it's gonna suck me in." No, but no, it was cool. And yeah, it was nice, kind of like you know, get that experience and you know, see like actual. You know, like steward, I don't know if they call them stewardesses or flight attendants, you know, but like, you know, it's something that I've just never been familiar with, you know? So it was nice. And it was weird though, like passing by like all the people like in the first class. And I was like, man, one day, one day. Cause they have like this nice, like little, like it was kind of like a cubicle, but like they had like little like spot for like the wine glasses and everything. I was like, okay, one day I'm going to do that just to see what it's like.
It gets fancy up there. It gets fancy. Oh, yeah. Long story, but I'll just cut it short. When we're going from Taiwan down to Malaysia, and something weird happened with our flight, and I had to get upgraded to business class. I had to pay for business class. And so my wife was with me and she goes, oh no, honey, I want you to take it. You know, you have wider shoulders. I'm sure the seats can be more comfortable. So I'm like, okay. So I'm sitting up there in business class. It's not like the full like cubicle cocoon situation, but I got nice seats. They're feeding me like nice food with like champagne glasses and stuff. And they're giving me all these free things. I had to tell them like, hey, can you just like leave me alone? I just want to, you're bothering me a little bit too much. Okay. Like if I want something, I'll call for you. And then after the flight, I told Tara about that. She goes, what? Like what? Like next time just switch with me. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Because I preferred my coach seat. I don't know. I just liked, I don't know. It's a whole thing, like experience. I don't know. I just like that little, my small seat with no room. I don't know why. I just like it. I don't know. I'm a weird person.
No, I get it. It feels cozy. Like I get it. Like it felt like nice and cozy and, you know, kind of like where I was at. Like they put me all the way in the back. Which, you know, I thought, you know, like for me again, like with that balance thing, I thought it would be bad, but it was great. Like I liked it. And since it was in the back, there was like a little area where I can get up and stretch too. So yeah, I kind of like that. And I get what you mean, you know, sometimes you get kind of, you know, just kind of like easy to please and kind of like know what you like, you know?
Yep. And that's what it is, you know, and not to say if I had the money, if I was a rich person and I could just, you know, fly first class, you know, on these long flights and spend, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 a ticket. If I had the money, maybe I would do it. We'll see. But as of right now, I'm liking my coach. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. So you make it to London. Walk us through kind of like that week a little bit. Like, what did you do? What are some of your experiences and highlights from that time?
I made it to London and just like right away, just looking at everything, I was just like, I'm actually here. You know, I kind of had to pinch myself because I just never like imagined ever doing a big trip like this, you know, and it was great. You know, I had some pen pals that gave me some ideas on good spots to go to. And right away, what I wanted to do was experience a full English breakfast. And so I went to this place, and it's been, you know, a long time, you know, establishment, and it was called the Regency Cafe. And there was a bit of a line, that was there. But
That's
I usually
good.
Think that if there's a line, it's a good thing. Yeah,
that's a good thing.
It's a good sign, exactly. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm glad that I came here. And it actually went by pretty quick too. I was very surprised. And this is going to be another Seinfeld reference, but you know that scene where they have like the soup Nazi guy where you have to order a specific way and stand in line. That's kind of the vibes that I got from this spot, because like everyone like had like queue a certain way and like order in a certain way and like be ready, you know, because the guy was just operating like a machine, you know. And dude, like these one ladies sat down before like they even placed their order with a ticket, and he stopped the gentleman. He's like, ma'am, do you have your like order ticket? And they're like, no. Like, then I need you to get back in queue, please. And I was like, whoa,
back of the line.
Yeah, so they got back into the queue, the line. And so I was like rehearsing in my mind, okay, this is what I want. You know, kept repeating it, making sure that I had exactly what I wanted and ordered the right way when I got up there. You know, but it was like super busy, super loud in there. But you can see everybody just like not even that many people were engaged in conversation because they were just too busy eating the delicious food, you know?
That's right.
And so I was, you know, once I ordered and stuff like that, the guy was actually like super nice. I was a little nervous and I was intimidated, but he was like super nice. And like the food was amazing. You know, like I never had, you know, like the tomatoes prepared that way, you know, any of it, you know, but it blew me away. I was like, whoa, this is good. It set the bar pretty high, you know? And what was really cool is, you know, like even as like I left and other customers were leaving, he remembered absolutely everybody by name. And he would say, thank you very much for coming. Like, I was like, whoa, like the amount of people that he sees, every single person that left, he said that by name. Like even when I was leaving, he was like, thank you, Chito, good man. I was like, thank
what?
You. You know, like I thought that was such a cool thing, you know, like, and yeah, I definitely want to go there again. It was Regency Cafe. And I believe it's like, I think it was like fifth of like the best restaurants in London or something like that. Like it's pretty high up there. Yeah. That was fun. It was good. I left there waddling because I ate so much.
Well, what did you like about the English breakfast? Like, describe to someone who may not know what that is.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, like the main thing is going to be like the tomatoes, the sausage, the bacon, and the beans with toast. You know, some of my friends, you know, that I've spoken to, like, oh, do you like beans and toast? I was like, we don't even have that. It doesn't even exist over here. And, you know, I never tried it. And yeah, it's like pork and beans, you know, but like the sauce is a little different. It's more like tomato-like sauce. No, it was really good. And it had like the hash browns. And there was also like sauteed onions. What I think what they do is they put like salt and oregano, and they just like sear it onto the, you know, like the griddle, like where like the meat was as well. Cause it gets like this flavor. It's hard to explain it. Like when you cut into the tomato, cause this, I never liked tomatoes, but when I had this one, it changed my mind, you know, cause it was a nice, like char crispiness on the outside. And then the inside was super soft, but like each bite just was like filled with flavors. And I just enjoyed it like so much. And I was like, man, you know, like I even told my mom, I was like, I actually ate a tomato. And she's like, what? I if it wasn't ketchup, I didn't touch anything that was like related to tomatoes. But you know, that was absolutely incredible. And just like the quality of like the meats, you know, that like I noticed, like to me, it's just, you know, chewing it. I don't know how to explain it. Like they were like thicker sausages, you know, and they were like full of flavor, super juicy. And like when I think about like the American sausage, it's usually kind of like smaller, like thin, you know, rolls, like links, you know, sausage links. But their portions, at least when it came to meat, was pretty, you know, pretty huge. You know, I left there like pretty satisfied. And the breads too, that's one of the things that I noticed the difference. Like from like the United States to there, it's just like something about like the bread just had like just
yeah,
like a,
I know what you mean.
You know, softer to it or something. But yeah, I definitely loved it there for sure. Like the, you know, the breads and, you know, like the meat. And like whenever I would eat, like I just felt more that satisfied feeling for a lot longer. I don't know how to explain. Like I felt full for a lot longer than I normally do.
Yeah, the food is, it's so crazy when you go to other places and just like the food, things that are simple. like fruits, vegetables, eggs, meat, bread, like those sort of things. Even milk. Holy, oh my goodness. Milk is bonkers how good milk is in other countries compared to the United States. There are a lot of things I love about America, but sometimes the food situation can be a bit annoying because it gets good bread costs a lot of money in the United States.
Yeah.
And in Europe, like bread is good. Bread is literally the only thing they serve. I mean, unless they have, they do have like American style white bread, but it's not like American white bread. They have their own like square, you know, white loaves that they use only for like toasted sandwiches. And that's it. Like they don't use it really for that much else. You know, maybe like if they use it for an English breakfast or something like that, they'll use like that white bread in the UK, but in other places it's mostly just, it's used for only toast, like in toasted sandwiches. And that's it. Like the, they, all the good bread they eat all the time for other things. So, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing too, like I wanted to mention too, like as far as like a condiment, like I never heard of this. Have you, like before I went there, like HP brown sauce, have you heard of that?
I know what is HP brown sauce? I'm intrigued.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess like it's called it House of Parliament sauce. And like one of my buddies, he was telling me, like there was like a guy who was like a leader that wanted, you know, to just have like something different, a taste, different taste to his food. And it could be totally wrong. This is just what he told me. And so he had them just make up some sort of sauce with different things. And it just, you know, birth this brown sauce that they pretty much have eaten it off of like everything, like for breakfast. And I actually recently went to the store to get some because I was like, okay, now I'm craving it. And it's just, it's hard for me to like identify like what it truly like tastes like, but like it's mildly sweet and mildly. Like you usually, it's like mildly sweet and it kind of looks like A1 steak sauce.
Yeah, I'm looking up some pictures right now of it. Yeah. I'm Googling it.
It looks like it. And like what I used to do, like it kind of like make like a taco. I would get a piece of bread, right? And then like I would kind of like fold it up kind of like a taco. And I'll put a little bit of layer of the beans and I'll slab the bacon and then sausage on top of that. Mm. And then some of the brown sauce and then the egg. Like some of the other people when I was working with, because like we would eat together. They look at me and they're like, whoa, what is that? And they tried it. It changed their life. I was like, I just kind of had to put my own twist to it. Oh my goodness. It was so good. And like the with like the sourdough toast that they would give us, it was excellent. But that brown sauce, it's
money.
Good.
Yeah,
it's money. Yeah. Like I even just actually yesterday morning for breakfast, I got the egg McMuffin, like with the ham.
Yeah.
And then I put the hash brown inside and I put brown sauce. The brown sauce too. It's just like, I was like, man, we got to bring this over here more often. So I'll let you guys try some so you can see what you think. Yeah. It's good stuff. Yeah.
So, what were some other things, highlights of England?
So even while I was there, like aside from, you know, trying like the different foods, you know, cause like I went to like Borough Market. That was one of those places that's really famous for food and like, and shopping and stuff like that. I actually went to this place, it's called Mei Mei. It's like Singaporean food. And there's a celebrity chef there. And to be fair, like honestly, like I have a huge crush on her. And I first saw her off of an Uncle Roger video. Do you know who Uncle Roger is?
Oh yeah, I love those skits. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he's so funny. Like, hiya. I love that guy. Yeah, he's so funny. So I actually, and he does a few videos at her spot, and you might have seen one. And I went and tried her food, and it was delicious. It was this like coconut chicken with rice, and like I've never tried Singaporean food. Like I said, like I've always just grown up just Mexican food, like Italian food here, and that's pretty much it. And that chicken just like fell straight off the bone. Like I lifted it up and like the chicken just like fell just straight onto the plate. And I was like stuck with just holding like a little piece of bone. And I was like, dang, like that's good. I got to tell you, like the creaminess to it, it was nothing that I've tasted before. And I loved it. And when I finished eating, you know, I said, thank you, chef. And she looked at me, she winked. I could have died right there. A happy man. I could have died right there. A happy man. I was like, she saw me and she winked at me. That was really cool just to see that and just to see the market and again, like seeing these places that have, a lot of history that have been there for ages. And that was kind of like one of the biggest things too that really drew me to that because, some say that a lot of civilization as we know it now kind of like roots from, like there in a way, and like culture. So I was like, it'd be cool to kind of like see, these old buildings and walk these streets. And I'm also a huge soccer fan. So being in the world like where soccer is the norm, like here it's all like football and basketball, and just kind of like being somewhere now where like, 'cause I geek out about like soccer a lot and, being on the tube, hearing like these group of ladies sitting there like, like betting and having arguments about like whose team's better, this and that.
Oh, it's serious. Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
where am I right now? So like it was cool to like see that. And I actually, am so glad that I had the opportunity to actually attend like a Premier League, match. Because after 2 days in London, I actually went south. Like I went to three different cities. Oh, actually four. After 2 days in London, I went south to Brighton. And Brighton, there, it's a coast town. It's a coast city.
Yeah.
And, everyone told me when I'm out there that I had to get, like fish and chips. And so I held off on the fish and chips in London until I went down south. And Brighton was such a cool city. Like Brighton was a lot more slower pace. Kind of felt more kind of like my vibe, because here in Denver, it's a slower pace of life. Whereas in London, it was just go, go, go,
Oh
go,
yeah,
go,
crazy.
like me, I'm a very personable, I'm like, hey, how's it going? Like there was a couple of times I said like, hello, hey, to the people. And they're just kind of like nod. And that was it, And, there was like other Americans that I ran into when they would hear me speak, they would come up and talk to me like, hey, like, where are you from? And it was cool. Like when I would just try to like say hi to someone like the locals, they'd be like, hey, and like that was it, So I was like, man, because everyone's just busy. They got somewhere to be, you don't want to miss the tube, so that was different for me. And being in Brighton, I was able to talk to some more of the locals and, checked out this one fish and chip spot. It was Little Jack Fuller's.
Little Jack Fuller's, gotcha.
Yeah, it's a popular spot down there that has, some fish and chips. And it was funny because like when I went there and when I placed my order, it was like, 8 pound. And then when I looked at it and it just said one piece, I was like, ooh, I was like, what? Just one piece of fish? I was like, what the heck? I was like, oh
Well.
man. So I would have to wait in line, But once they handed it to me, it made total sense. It was a
Yep.
huge piece of
Enormous.
fish. Yeah, it was bigger than my head. And like they gave me a massive like bed of fries. Chips is what it was. Chips. Even to this day, I get it mixed up. And it was amazing. I was like, yes, I get it now, and comparing it to, what we get here, here it's nice, but the portion size, we're smaller. That's the only kind of thing that I noticed like the difference. But the food is actually, like comparing to, like GB fish and chips here, which
Yeah.
it's fair. I had a couple of different spots down there in Brighton, and honestly, in my opinion, it's not too far off, but you can tell the difference there because they're right off of the coast, and like the fish is just, nice and like tender, and like the breading was crispy, and they do, of course, like the beer batter,
Yeah.
but that was great. I loved it, and like even the food in the stadium was amazing. I had such an awesome experience there too, because like I emailed the team just asking them. I was like, hey, I'm coming from the United States. This is my first time ever going to a Premier League match. What's the best game day experience? So they let me know a couple of spots to go to and like how to get, to the stadium with like the supporters. That was absolutely insane too.
That's
Because,
fun.
like,
All right.
yeah, it was so cool because, like, I guess, like for every match, they get one of the trains that usually goes into the other parts of town, and they just like decommit, like, they just don't take routes for the day, and it's just specifically to take people to the stadium. And it was a sea of like blue and white because that was the local team's colors. And just hearing the chants and like being there, like I've only heard them like over the TV watching these games, and being in there in the middle of it and just, like all the families, again, different generations that are just still partaking in that tradition. I was just like blown away. I was like, man, I is this real? I just kept pinching myself, you know, like, God, is this happening?
Yeah.
And it was so cool because then when we finally made it to the stadium and like hearing, you know, like the people chant all the way to the stadium, I made it to my seat and the team gave me a gift bag. And they wrote me a card saying, you know, hope you enjoyed your first Premier League match. And they gave me a scarf and like this, like this card. I was like, that's a class move, you know? And it was
classy.
This, it was a, yeah.
Wow.
Classy. I was like, that's so cool. And it was a Brighton and Hove Albion, was the team that I went to go watch. And again, you know, just being a part of like the crowd, hearing the chants. And there was moments too where I found myself kind of like shouting, like, oh, come on, ref, you know, what the heck you doing? Open your eyes, you know, like, and like the guy next to me was talking to me, he goes, yeah, that's the spirit. I was like, yeah, it was cool. It's just very contagious, you know, like just like the energy. And that is just, you know, everything that, you know, I hoped it was and more. And I had like these meat pies that they were giving there.
Meat pies. Oh, yes. Man. I bet
meat
that was
pies.
Wonderful.
That was so good. I was like, yeah, just like the flakiness and everything like that. I'm like, this seems like something that like back home, like I probably pay top dollar for, you know, but it was just like, you know, like 4 pounds and it was pretty, you know, hefty meat pie, you know? And no, that was great. And just, you know, eating the food, you know, I actually had a little bit of a beer that one of the guys that sat next to me, you know, bought me a drink. And I was like, you know, I don't really drink much. I was like, you know what? Hey, like, you know, when in Rome, you know, it's like, I just, you know,
right.
I did that and it was cool. And, you know, just seeing like their nickname for the team are the seagulls, and to see just tons of seagulls fly around, it was just, it added to the magic. I was blown away.
That sounds amazing. Just because you are in this really unique cultural situation, you're experiencing it with the people who live in that city, and something that's so valuable and so important to them, even if it's for us, you know, just like a sporting event. But I don't know. To me, I know people love sports here and they'll get in fights over it. I feel like over in Europe, man, it's another level of the deep love and passion for soccer.
Oh, yeah.
is like, they like, you will make an instant enemy if you say the wrong thing about their team, you know, like boom, automatically, yeah, like we don't like you now and you're gonna pay.
So, yes,
they're very passionate over there, like all over Europe, but I couldn't imagine there in the UK what that was like for you.
Oh yeah, man, that's no,
so fun.
It was intense for sure, and like it was cool, like seeing, you know, like the little kids, you know, and like hearing one of the dads was talking about, oh, yeah, you know, like we're going to go see, you know, these players and stuff like that. And he was telling his kids just like the story of each of the, like the little, you know, like the players on the teams. And it was just kind of like crazy, you know, like it's like, man, like this guy like studied so much about everybody, you know, and he's sharing that with his kid, you know, and just seeing that, I was just like, man, you know, that's just like really cool. And it's something that I was like looking forward to, you know, going to the UK was just seeing that, you know, because here, you know, like I love soccer, but you know, it's not as big a part of the, you know, of relevancy here. You know, most people are, it's you know, NFL and like basketball and hockey for sure, you know, but soccer is coming up, and that's, it has my heart. You know, that was one of the big things of, you know, going to the UK, because it's a huge part of that. And then after Brighton, I went over to Manchester, which was, I think it's just like 2 hours north. And it's crazy how small the UK is compared to here. Like I was looking at a map and I said, like, most of UK fits inside Colorado.
Yep, that's right.
which that alone was like blew my mind, you know? So like I went all the way from like the bottom of like the UK all the way up to like, you know, kind of like the upper half of it. And it was like, what, maybe like 3 hours. And, you know, Manchester was a cool town too. It was another one that was a little more like my pace, kind of like felt a little more comfortable. I went to visit like the Manchester United stadium there, which was like, Manchester United is like a super club, you know. It was definitely bigger than the Brighton team that I went to. And, you know, like going over there just to see that massive stadium too was just unreal. You know, like I've always seen pictures of it and heard about it and, you know, and stuff, but like being there too was cool. And I guess they say like in Manchester, you know, in there they have like a very big influence of like Indian food and Indian cuisine.
That's right.
So they told me when I'm there to make sure that I go eat, you know, like curry. So I went to this spot that was recommended that it was called This and That. And it was crazy to like, you know, because when I would like, you know, punch it in on this app that I use, and this app saved my life. It was called City Mapper. And what's cool is that like with each new city, it'll identify and then it says, do you want to download the map for the city? And it'll download it. And it's like that thing helped me so much with like finding out like where to go, even down alleys, you know, sidewalks, not just like roads. And like, you know, it kept all the schedules for the buses and everything was just like on point with that. And it helped me so much get around. Like if I was a local, really, like I didn't have any trouble even in London at the two because of that app. But yeah, so like with the, you know, going to this spot, this and that, like I was looking around because I was like, it should be here, but you actually had to go down the alley quite a ways. And for a second there, I was like, maybe not. But then I was like, no, this means that people are making their way through this, making that risk
Yeah.
for a reason. So I was like, okay, let's go. And yeah, I went in there and it was super busy. And I got this thing. It was just called like rice and three. And so I just got a bed of rice and like three, the choice of three different curries. And I did like lamb and chicken tikka masala. And I can't remember what else I got. But this was my first time trying anything like that. And oh, man, it was so good. I never had lamb before. Lamb was delicious.
Yeah, lamb is one of my favorite things when it comes to Indian food, like lamb vindaloo. Let's say it's like super spicy. Yeah, lamb is, it's unique because it has a good pairing with just like those curry kind of flavors in general, like all those spices. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
I
get
was
you.
scared to get spices because, like, you know, when they say like there's like a huge, you know, spectrum of like the levels of spices, and I was like, I don't want to choose the wrong one. Like, I don't want to say number, and he'd be like, really, this guy, you know, or say one, and they look at me like, whoa, you're a brave man. So I just said no spice, which, you know,
That's
I was
good.
fine. I
It's
played it
okay.
safe for now. But no, it was really good. It was nice to kind of like, you know, like try something new, you know, and no, that was delicious. I definitely, you know, I try to get some when I came back home, but I don't really know too many spots that really have, you know, really good like curries or, you know, like Indian cuisine.
Oh man, that sounds amazing. Yeah, like people don't understand how big of a deal curry is over in the UK. So it really is, like some people would argue that it's like the national dish, you know, of the UK. I mean, arguably so. It's definitely in the top five, I think, for most people, like because you have like fish and chips, bangers and mash, you have that sort of thing. But definitely lots of good food over in the UK. Now I want to transition over to Finland and what it was like being in this super snowy, very cold kind of environment and working and living there.
Oh yeah, no, it's yeah, no joke. It was pretty cold. It was kind of cold because in a way it reminded me a lot of home, which was nice, you know, and like seeing all the pine trees and stuff like that. I was like, you know, I just feel like I'm in a Colorado home. In a Colorado town, I mean mountain town. And the way the cold feels there is just so different for some reason. And I had to learn a lot about how to keep your body, you know, warm and managing sweat, you know, because they say,
Oh,
you know,
yes,
sweat
huge.
is going to be your
It'll kill
enemy
you.
sometimes.
Oh,
Yeah.
man, it
So
can kill you. Yeah.
I was like, why sweat glands? Why are you doing this to me? Like they told us, like when we're outside, make sure we have all of our layers properly on, you know, any type of like, make sure you like your sleeves, everything was like, we're covered up, you know, but don't want to put too many layers on your feet, you know, too many socks will cause even like more sweating. And you know, when we go inside, immediately, you know, open up like your jacket and stuff like that, take layers off so you don't continue to sweat while you're inside. And I made that mistake, you know, when I walked down the, you know, to the one of the local shops, and I just kept all my gear on. And then when I walked back up, I was freezing my McNuggets off so bad. I was like, why is this happening?
It's a
And then I
sweat.
like,
Yeah.
yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, I was like a lot more colder than it was. Good thing the walk wasn't too bad. And it was like a lot of it was uphill. So I kind of like started to warm up. But yeah, no, that was one of the things that I had to really you have to really like actively think about,
it's
you know.
Cold. Well, it's the humidity. So like here in Colorado, it's a dry cold in the altitude. And I love it, actually. Like going up to Mountain Town when it's like super snowy and you just like breathe in this air, it's just like crisp and clean and nice. And the sun's really warm if the sun's out. But Lapland, because of the altitude, it's lower altitude, so it has a higher humidity. And higher humidity and cold means you just feel more cold. It's just not very, it's not the most fun experience to be in a very humid, cold environment. And then if you sweat, just like it just makes you more cold later on when you aren't sweating as much or when you go back out into the cold. Oh my goodness, I couldn't imagine what that was like.
And then it was weird because like right away, like you feel like, you know, your eyelashes would start to freeze, beard and my mustache would freeze. Like there was a time where like I tried to like open my eyes up a little more and like it was freezing my eyelashes shut. So I had to try to warm it up melt it a little so I could open my eyes all the way. It was wild. And it was crazy to think too, cause like even then with how cold it was, like the activity still went on, like the show went on. And I asked them, I was like, absolutely. What's the coldest that it needs to get before they just say, hey, families, we're just going to stay inside. And they said, if it gets -40 Celsius, that's when they would stop it. And we got down to -35 and like, we were still out there, you know, I was like, what is going on? You know, but you know, like after a while you do kind of start getting used to an understanding how to keep yourself warm. And like, we had open fires around and stuff too. So, you know, that was, you know, that kept me feeling, you know, okay. And, but yeah, that cold was definitely something that I, you know, wasn't like, I knew it was going to be cold, but I didn't think it was going to be like that. You know, I was like with confidence, all puffy chesty, like, oh, I'm from Colorado. This isn't going to be a problem at all. Yeah. Yeah. I learned real quick, how cold it gets. And just like seeing the people drive over there too, though, this is one thing that like, it's kind of odd to me is that like the roads were like icy. People were still going full speed and sometimes even going faster than the speed limit. And there wasn't any accidents at all that I've seen. Like my whole time I was there, I was like, these guys have like super technology on their tires or what? Cause here in Colorado, like there's a little bit of snow. There's quite a few accidents. So I was, there's something going on there. But no, the cold was, you know, was different, but, I managed it. Thank goodness.
Goodness. Oh yeah. Yeah, man. Well, that sounds so exciting. I was just looking through your pictures, you know, when you were posting them up, and we were keeping in contact a little bit during that time. And I love like really, really snowy days, especially like at sunset when the sky's clear and how the snow looks and how the trees look and everything. And it seems like it was a very beautiful, really wonderful winter environment, despite the cold, but just to experience that. So with doing these sort of like shows and activities and stuff like that, how was it? Like, was it like, if like would you participate and would you recommend people to go visit this place and to interact and to have a good time?
Oh yeah, definitely. Just cause just like even being around, like just seeing the trees, the way they were like covered in snow. It just, for some reason, I just make me feel like calm and like, and like it was like very calming like environment. And yeah, seeing that when the sun would like come out, when it did, because it was very rare when there was sun, it was maybe an hour or two and then it turns back to night. That was one thing to get used to as well. I kind of lost my mind a little bit with that, but like when the sun would come out and stuff like that, and you know, gleams like over like the trees, it was absolutely beautiful. And what's nice is too is like the way the snow falls, it looks like really sparkly. And it just like feels magical for some reason. And I kind of like use that, like when we would, the kids would be around, like we had like this process when we would first pull up was where, you know, they'll put glitter on our face and they say, hey, this is the magic sparkle. So we can see all the elves and everybody. And, you know, like the kids like, why is it sparkly? And I would say, hey, that's from Santa, Mrs. Claus's sparkle. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And the kids were trying to catch it. Like, it was cool, you know, just seeing their face, you know, all lit up. But that's kind of like part of like the, you know, the magic of that experience. And that's what drove me to want to go out there too, is kind of rediscover that magic of the holidays. Cause, you know, as you get older, it just doesn't feel the same as when you're a kid, you know? And that was kind of like one of the things too that I was hoping for. And seeing how they ran everything and planned everything out, it was great. Yeah, I definitely think, you know, it's definitely worth going, you know, because and like the parents would be so thankful of it, because all they just need to worry about is just making sure that they get to that first plane on time. And then the rest, we handled it until we send them, you know, back home, and they just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. And like we handled the rest, you know, and, you know, kept the kids and everybody and like engaged and stuff. And, you know, like all the meals and everything were included. And the meals were great too. You know, they had a really good team of chefs, you know, cooking the meals for the guests. And it was like seeing that end of it. And also being the Arctic star that I was, I got to see both sides of it. Because there's people who were, you know, participating as the elves, yeah. So they were only on one side, you know. But, you know, seeing that, I was able to see everything that goes on behind the scenes to make it absolutely perfect. And seeing the payoff, it just, you know, was a well-rounded experience. And I loved it. And I definitely would say it's worth doing for sure.
Well, from this huge 6-week long trip, I'm sure you learned a lot and you experienced a lot in that time. So let's start off with, for people who want to take a big trip, what advice would you give them if it's like their first time and they're a little nervous?
Honestly, like I think the big advice is, because I had to do this myself, is just go for it. You know, I've always like played it safe, thinking, you know, like, oh, what if this happens? What if this happens? And I overthink so much. You know, thinking a lot about what could go wrong and not really just looking at, hey, what's going to go right and what could go right.
That's right.
And
yeah.
That was the biggest thing for me that kept me, you know, from trying to make those moves is, so, you know, is to me, I think, you know, what helped me is just like going for it and just putting those thoughts in the back of your head of, you know, of those doubts. And one of the things that helped me too, and, you know, is like seeking the right type of, you know, like advice. And your page and one of your guests, you know, talked about, you know, like London and like being prepared and stuff like that. And that helped me too, in a way, to like, just kind of like feel a little more comfortable and like realizing that, you know, I'm not doing this alone. There's so many people out there that are like doing this as well. And, you know, I just got to go for this. So I think that advice would be is, you know, just make that move and don't just think about it anymore. Put that plan into action.
Yeah. I like how you put it. Like, you can think about all the things that can go wrong, but what about the things that can go right? I mean, the amazing experiences, the memories that you have, I think they outweigh a lot of the risks, because most of the risks that we have are in our minds, you know, and they are real, and these fears are real, and things can go wrong on a trip, but most of the time things go pretty smooth. And if you have done a little bit of research, if you have a good head on your shoulders, for the most part, everything's going to go pretty smooth. Did anything not go as planned, or did anything go wrong, or was there any like really uncomfortable moments during this like 6-week long trip?
You know, looking back, I don't really think that there was anything really that I could say that went wrong. Thank goodness, you know, knock on wood that the next time I travel, you know, it goes that way. But everything, you know, from what I set out to do, you know, went through just fine, you know. Just like, I guess like one of the things that I really want to do is to see those guys that shout, like, you know, make way for the Queen's Guard. I wanted to see them so bad, but I didn't get a chance to see them. And I guess I eventually looked it up, and they said that like there's certain like shifts that they take, and I just got there at the wrong time. That's like the only thing that I was like, man, I didn't get a chance to do that. But thank goodness everything else went okay. You know, cause you know, I did prepare like a lot. I got that city mapper, and there's this app called Wyze. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, Wyze helped me out a bunch. So, you know, I was able to get the Wyze card, and it was so easy to get the currency correct and transfer it from my American account to that, where I was able just to use the card like a local, you know, and that alone just helped me with a lot of stress. So I was like, oh, you know, like, what if I don't get it, pull enough money out, so and so. Like, that was kind of one of the things that did stress me out. But like, that helped me too, you know. So that and having the right app to be able to travel around and stuff, like, you know, that helped me out a lot, kind of like make things, you know, so much easier. So that was that, like, preparing, you know, properly.
Yeah. I mean, there's an app for most of our concerns, especially for these like little details that can be a menace sometimes on like in our minds, because you know, just like what I do about money, you know, what happens if this happens and what I do about the trains or get showing up on time or hitting the buses or what happened, like what do I do with all this stuff? And there's a lot of great information on the internet and there's a lot of great apps. Just like you mentioned a couple, and it's just like great. Like it's just one of those tools that you can utilize that can make your trip just go, goodness, that much smoother.
And it kind of like, you know, like I said, you know, like you're not at it alone. Like there's so many people who create these services or use these services and have these experiences to, you know, like, so like I knew and I was able to trust, like, you know, a lot of that, you know, and you know, it helped me a lot, you know. And I did this, and some people, you know, was, you know, told me, oh, be careful like Airbnbs, but I did stay with some Airbnbs and that helped me save a ton of money.
Oh
And
yeah. Oh yeah.
yeah, and I found some cool food spots going to like my Airbnbs that I probably wouldn't have seen on like other lists. Like I found this spot that has like this like peri peri like fried chicken spot. Oh my gosh, that was
Good.
absolutely
Good,
insane.
huh?
I was like,
Peri
what?
peri chicken.
Oh
Yes.
yeah, I was like, this is so good. Like, what the heck? And I was, 'cause I was actually going over to like this little shop and I was gonna get like these pre-made sandwiches. And I saw that spot and I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, I gotta try this. And I got like 6 pieces of chicken and a side and a drink, and it was like 5 pounds, which would probably be like maybe like $7 or something like that here, which is still a pretty good deal. You know, and I was like, I'm glad, you know, going to an Airbnb kind of like where the locals are or where the locals will be,
That's
it
right.
just kind of
Yep.
like let me see those things. So that to me was a good part of it, you know, and that how I think that kind of like made my experience a little better for sure.
Yeah, I'm a big Airbnb person. That's usually the only thing that we use. I like it. Just like you mentioned, you can go in like a neighborhood where people really live and you get more of that local feel sometimes, especially with the restaurants that can just be kind of hidden away in these neighborhoods that if you stayed in like the city center or like a hotel in the city center, you would never go. You would never go there. Like you wouldn't go to these little neighborhoods and check out a restaurant usually. But if your Airbnb is there, you know, you just walk down the street and you can just like try out this like little spot, this little bar, and then who knows what you might find from there. And that's part of the excitement. That's the fun part, the unplanned, the I guess serendipitous moments that can happen while you're traveling. And yeah, I'm glad you did the Airbnb route. I would recommend to most people.
No, definitely. Because, and like also, like I said, like on it saved a lot of money too. Because I looked at hotels and a lot of them were like a couple of hundred a night. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I looked at Airbnb, $40 a night. I was like, you can't beat that. And
Can't beat it.
there was this one time too where I was, you know, leaving the Airbnb and I was going over to the train station. And on my way there, I saw this huge, like, you know, market. And I was like, whoa, what the heck is going on here? You know, it was, I think it was like on a Friday or, and then I was walking and I saw this huge market, food vendors and selling like a lot of like cool vintage stuff. And I was like, oh, this is cool. See, like this I probably would have missed if I would have stayed like at a city center at like a hotel and, you know, just walked around and checked out all the cool stuff that the vendors had. I was like, you know, like this is what it's about, you know, experiencing, you know, like what the locals experience. And that was pretty cool. And that's one thing I noticed too. There's a lot of neighborhoods that have their own like markets and stuff like that, which was awesome.
Yeah, it's like when you go to these markets and you discover these little things and these shops, especially when it comes to food too, it's like one of my favorite like experiences while traveling. So from this whole experience that you've had, this really great trip, how did you grow? Like what happened to you? Like how did you change from the person that you were before you left and the person that came back?
I feel like, you know, like my mind kind of has opened a lot more now to really seeing how big, you know, the world is. I've always really known Denver. I never really even ventured outside of Denver, really. And it's kind of like opened my eyes that like the world is so big, but you can see it, you know, you can touch it, you can feel it, it's possible to do it, you know, it's just like going for it. And that's what kind of like changed my mind, is that like, oh, it just seems like impossible or seems unreal. And now that I've gone and done that, I'm like, hey, I did it and I can do it. And like, I know now that I want to do it again. So I think that's kind of like one of the things for sure right off the bat, is that like, you know, it opened my mind and it opened my heart to, you know, the love of travel. And also like those challenges of doing something new in Finland, like, you know, like it let me learn more about myself, you know, because it was a lot of like time management. It was a lot of like, you know, problem solving on the fly. And, you know, my years of experience never really was much that, you know, but like bursting out of that comfort zone and taking on those new challenges. And then, you know, like, you know, doing the best that I can for those families, and them coming up to me saying, thank you absolutely made this. It's just like that too helped me grow, in the sense that, hey, I could do something like this. I can, you know, like I can manage, and I can think a lot better on my feet. And, you know, that's just like one of the things too that, you know, opened my eyes to myself, because I've always been kind of like, this is my position, I'm just kind of like comfortable here, and I kind of like stayed with that. You know, always a tier one wherever the companies that I went with. I never really moved up or did anything new, because I always thought in my mind, you know, maybe I'm not cut out for that, or maybe, you know, I'll be in over my head, you know. But this really opened my eyes to see my potential, and that, hey, I can do this, you know. So there was a lot of, you know, like internal growth and self-realization, you know, being out there, that, you know, I'll never forget. And I'm thankful that, you know, I was able to leave there with this. And I think I grew more as a person in that sense of like knowing myself more.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, that brings us to a close here, man. It's been like an hour and a half. So this has been good. It's been good. Is it okay if listeners follow you, online?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. It's Cheeto in the Middle, on Instagram. Cheeto in the Middle. I post, you know, about, you know, my food and, you know, more of my travels, because I'm definitely gonna travel more.
Hearing about Orazio's trip just gets me excited to go to London and to give Finland a shot. I think it was so great how he found a way to travel and really embrace that adventurous spirit to go after your dreams and passions, to put yourself out there, to take a few risks and grow from the whole process. Everybody, even myself, I have fears, I have apprehensions, and I have destinations that are very intimidating for me. Sometimes just that extra research and changing my mindset to being, hey, I'm going to explore. I'm going to go on an adventure. And that means sometimes it's not going to go smooth or 100% the way I expect in my mind, but it's going to be an amazing experience, something that is fun and memorable that I will tell other people about. It won't be a regret for taking that risk, for taking that plunge, and just booking that trip. And I hope that Orazio's message really resonates with some of you who are on the fence, maybe unsure about where to go, what to do, or if they have this dream trip planned, but they just don't know exactly how to make it work, to do whatever it takes. Get hired for another job overseas. Do these things that will force you to step out of your comfort zone and just take this life-changing trip. For the show notes of this page, for some of the specific restaurants that Orazio visited and some of the things that he did, go to nomadicfoodist.com/Orazio. That's nomadicfoodist.com/Orazio. That's Orazio, Orazio. If you liked this episode and you want to hear more, please hit that subscribe button so that every single week you get a brand new episode with amazing travelers and experts from around the world. Thank you again for listening, and remember, eat with an adventurous heart, no matter where you go.